Hey everybody, just wanted to give you a quick heads up about this episode. We recorded this about a couple hours before this one, before I'm speaking about this, but I had some technical difficulties on my mic side. I record on an older computer, older laptop, and I guess something just started lagging a couple times in the middle of the podcast where our times didn't line it up at all. And then when I went to try to line them up, my file just completely crashed. So Noah's is intact, and luckily for the sake of this episode, this was just mostly talking and me chiming in with a couple questions, a couple stuff like that. So if you're listening to the podcast and there's a small gap of silence, hang on. Noah will start talking immediately. And yeah, this is all about the FSU spring game, if you can't tell by the title and all that stuff. So here we go.
This is No Ordinary Pod. No Ordinary Pod.
And that is right, Noah. This is the No Ordinary Podcast on the Radio St. Pete Network and the No Ordinary Pods Network that will be launched soon. That beautiful voice you heard was Noah Hemer singing a rendition of Sade's No Ordinary Love. And Noah, how are things going up there in Tallahassee, the nation's capital?
Things are going great, man. You know, I know that we always talk about weather, but weather's starting to turn, starting to get a little bit warmer, which I appreciate. School's going well. Spring games this Saturday. Really excited to go see my guys ball out. Hopefully it's not too rainy, but, you know, good stuff over here.
Going to the game?
Oh, 100%,
man. In that case, kudos to you, man. I never got to go to a spring game. I mean, I went to spring games, but I was usually working, and if I wasn't working, then I didn't really attend it, I don't think so. That's just me, though. You're the diehard college football fan between us. I considered my time working at FSU more of a job, per se, than actually a love for the game. Like, you, I mean, you love the training and stuff like that. I love the equipment. I made a lot of good friends out of it. But quick story time about the one spring game experience I remember very vividly is that it was 2013, the night before Jameis became Jameis overnight in the spring game, to the long touchdown pass to the walk-on on his first throw of the game. And I'm at home the night before the game. I'm watching. This is back when I was a big Lakers fan. Not the one that LeBron's done to my franchise, or that franchise, I should say. But I'm watching Kobe will this team from just a very talented team with the Dwight Howard and Steve Nash, and just will them to the playoffs. And they were getting hot at the right time, and that's a team that nobody wanted to see. They beat the number one seed Spurs, who went on to win the title that year. Or compete for the, yeah, go to the, yeah, lose in the finals. Yeah, they lost in the finals. Should I do the math? Yeah, they lost in the finals that year, I'm pretty sure. And I'm watching the game, and Kobe goes down in the fourth quarter against Golden State Warriors. This is before the Warriors became the Warriors. He goes down and tears his Achilles. And it was just a blow to me because I've invested so much into that Lakers season as a Lakers fan, as all these things. So seeing them lose that game, they won the game, but seeing Kobe go down, my favorite player, probably my favorite athlete in general, just go down at that time period. And then, to top it off, I wake up the next morning, and it's a spring game, and I felt like a sickness I never felt before. So I'm just in there laying down in the equipment room, and I'm like, man, I am really sick right now. Wake up. I'm on and off sleeping. When the team comes in and someone needs something outside, I run outside real quick. So I wake up the next day. I wake up again sick, even sicker. And sure enough, I have mono, which was terrible on surface, but it did kind of serve me a purpose because my grades that semester weren't the best. And this gave me an out to, you know, get some stuff weighed, go to the doctor, say, hey, he has mono, get the blood work done. I can't finish my classes. Got to go home. Yada, yada. Seinfeld reference right there. And it's just, and that was that. So that's my main spring game experience. Noah, what has you excited about this spring game?
Yeah, I was just looking at these rosters. I was trying to figure out where I wanted to start. And I think where I'm just going to start is just I'm going to break down each roster, highlight the guys that I like, and go on from there. Just to highlight the Garnet team. Main contributors that Florida State fans in particular, maybe some national people that might be aware of, Levante Taylor's on the Garnet team, Cam Akers, Kalen LeBourne, DJ Matthews, Landon Dickerson, our best offensive lineman, is on the gold team, and honestly, big Robert Cooper, It's also on the gold team. But I'm just going to start by talking about these running backs initially.
If I interject and ask a question real quick.
Yeah, 100%. Please.
So, just quick. This isn't about the running backs. Yes. This is about Levante Taylor. Levante Taylor, his freshman year, played a little bit, played well. Sophomore season was, I'm 99% sure, was rated College Football, Pro Football Focus's number one cornerback in terms of pass rating targeted against. What happened this season, man? I mean, he's a smaller size DB. He seemed to get attacked, especially in that first Virginia Tech game. Teams just kept going at him and at him and at him consistently. And it doesn't make sense to me why there would be such a big drop-off. So I'm interested to see. You were there. You have a little insight. You were watching the game. I'm interested to see hear what you have to say about this topic.
I think a lot of it is he didn't get a lot of safety help over the top. And we kept lining him up on on their team's number one receiver. And he just, for lack of a better way to put it, just kind of lacked the confidence. I think the defensive shift going from Kelly's defense to, I'm blanking on who the D coordinator is, the old Michigan State D coordinator. Yes, Harold.
I'll look up his name while you're doing all this.
But I think a lot of it was just change of scheme is kind of what made him feel out of place. I never thought that he was getting played in the best way possible. Because when I was watching him in training camp, I was very impressed with how quickly he moved, the way he jumped routes, the way he read the eyes of the quarterback. But when it came to the game, he just kept getting picked on and picked on and picked on, especially in man coverage against those bigger receivers. But I don't know if man coverage is necessarily his strong suit at all times against those bigger receivers. So I'm excited to go ahead.
Interjection. His name is Harlan Burnett.
Yes, Barnett. That's right.
If you struggle in man coverage as a DB, especially in today's football, how is that a... what can improve with him if he's a struggling man coverage DB?
It was just in the way in which we were scheming up, because we were putting him on an island and sending pressure, not always getting there, and then not sending safety help over the top, while he was being pressed and honestly bullied by these bigger receivers. But I never thought it was a talent issue or an experience issue. To me, as the season went on, it became more of a confidence issue. And I think he started letting the noise get to him, if I'm being 100% honest. And the tweets and the Instagram comments and things of that nature, I think he started letting all that get to you, like, oh, you're just too undersized, yada, yada, yada. And he kind of lost of who he was and wasn't 100% confident in his abilities. I haven't been working spring ball, so I don't know exactly how it's shaping up now, but that's why I'm excited to see what he can do on Saturday to see what's going to happen, because the DBs behind Levante Taylor are very deep. We are very talented in the secondary. And if he's not playing up to his standard, then someone else is going to be playing up to their standard, and that'll be higher than what he's playing at. So with that being, and we have a very strong receiving core. I think our receivers are probably our deepest position. Receiver and running back are our two deepest positions for sure. And if he's been battling it, especially against like Terry, especially against smaller, quicker guys like DJ Matthews, Keyshawn Helton, people of that nature, if he's been battling with them and being able to keep up with them during spring ball practice, I'd like to see what he can do, especially with some more confidence and some more comfortability in the scheme. But it just never seemed as if he was getting put in the best positions to succeed. With safety help over the top and running that, I would have bump and ran him a little bit more, because there were times where he was playing off and I thought he should have been in their face, and then times where he was in their face and I thought he should have been playing off. So I think it was just kind of more of a comfort level, more so than anything, and a lack of confidence. But I mean, when you watch him his sophomore year, like the dude is uberly talented. It's just he's undersized, and he's got to be able to not get bullied in that way, but he got exposed this past year. And I also think, like, maybe it's not always keen to put him on, like, you can't, I don't think you should always be putting him on the number one receiver, which sucks to say, but, like, you can't be putting him up against someone that's 6'4", 6'5", 6'3", 6'2", and higher, honestly, just because he isn't the biggest dude, and if you throw a jump ball, there's not really going to be a whole lot that he can do about it, unless if he's just locked down, and he has to be locked down every single time for that to not happen. And that's tough of any DB.
5'10", he's listed out a little generous. I know people like to bloviate height and weight just to make people seem bigger and better. So
slightly, yeah. Just slightly. I would say,
because yeah, that's common in high school sports, college sports. You want to give yourself a bigger height just to make yourself seem bigger in scouts, and then you see the person and they're a little smaller than you think.
No. But like I said, I saw him, he made several plays. I thought he was our best DB in training camp. And that's why I was so surprised with what was happening during the season. And the biggest play he made was against that, was at week two against Samford, when he had that pick six to seal the win. But other than that, he really didn't do a whole lot down the stretch. He got banged up a little bit. But overall, it was something that I'm looking forward to see what he can do. Cause he's a tough guy, comes into the training room all the time, working on his treatment, working on getting better. Hard worker, soft spoken in practice, just kind of puts his head down and gets to work. And that's something I really appreciate and respect, of his, because I respect people that just come and do the work, do what they got to do. Don't necessarily, like, I run my mouth, I'm a trash talker, but he's really just all about business. And then when he makes a play, he'll you know, stare you down, give you the body language. But other than that, you know, he's strictly business. So I'm excited to see what he can do against our receiving core, because I think our receiving core is our deepest position. They're like, I look at the receivers that we have listed on both these rosters, and I'm like, yeah, all of these guys will contribute at FSU at some point. For the most of these guys will, all except for maybe two or three.
To build off that, looking at the receivers on the gold team, Tamari and Terry, your boys Keyshawn and Trayshawn, which we'll hear about later, they're going to give a different look for Levante. Levante's going to be going against a 6'5 monster in Tamarian, and a smaller guy, and a couple smaller guys in Keyshawn Trayshawn. So he's going to be able to get practice. And if he's not already practicing against Tamarian every day in one-on-ones, then he should continue to get better. So that's the thing I'm looking forward to most with Levante Taylor going up against the receivers on the gold team.
It's Keyshawn and Keyshawn will be the speed guy on that side. And then the other speed guy that's on the team is DJ Matthews, but he's on the Garnet team. DJ Matthews is probably the fastest guy on the team. Yeah, he's the one that returned the kick six, had the return for six against Miami in that third quarter to put us up.
Oh, that turned out
great game. But to kind of jump from the Levante Taylor back to these running backs, because I think these two running backs on this Garnet team is the highlight of this Garnet team. You got Cam Akers and Kalen LeBourne. Kalen LeBourne coming back from that pretty gnarly knee injury that he had earlier in the season. He's finally fully back, healthy, dominating a practice from what I've heard. And he's a dude that really is always ready to ball. You know, it, like, for example, people asked him last year, because last year was when I was like, who is this kid, man? Because he had that long touchdown run and just outran everyone. And he sees a hole and he hits it. If there's no hole to hit and you're in the hole, he's going to run you over or he's going to break your ankles. I think Kalen LeBourne might be our most talented running back on the team. But at the same time, coming back from injury can be tough for anyone. And trusting that knee trusting any injury can be tough for anyone. So it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back and how much he trusts his knee, especially in the bigger stage like the spring game. But the kid is a baller, and if he makes big plays, no one should be surprised at all, because that's just what he does. I asked him, I have a decent rapport with him, and I asked him, hey, why do you like football? He goes, I'm good at it. I love it. Like, I love being good at football. So he just balls, and he knows what to do, and he has great instincts. It's not necessarily something like how where he can come back to me and explain it, but you watch it, and he just does it. It's one of those things you can't teach what he has. He was in the training room doing the things that he had to do, and so I'm excited to see how he bounces back, especially with that 1-2 combo of him and Cam Akers, because from the look of it, it looks like the this Garnet team has our best offensive line in Landon Dickerson. Chaz Neal is up there in terms of our offensive linemen. Dante Lucas is a true freshman right now. He was an early enrollee from IMG, and the dude is huge. He just, like, I look at him and I'm like, how are you a freshman? Big dude, plays guard, and I would not want to have to go one-on-one against him. So it looks like they're going to be having a pretty solid O-line in front of those two running backs. I would assume they're probably going to be our top two running backs going into the season, based off experience and talent at this point. And it'll be fun to see how Briles has gotten this offensive line to where it needs to be, but B, how these two running backs going behind the same offensive line can navigate their way and see who can do what when the offensive line is performing, and who can do what when the offensive line might slip, or when they slip. Offensive lines are never perfect in any game, despite if you got the Cowboys O-line from a couple years ago, or if you have FSU's O-line from last year. Like, some plays are going to be great, some plays are not going to be not. One might be more tendency to the other, but at the same time, there's always room to see who's making something out of nothing and who's making big things when there's only a little something there. So it'll be fun to see the battle between it. For me in particular, that's what I'm going to be watching when this Garnet team's on offense, is what is Cam Akers doing when he gets the ball in his hands? What is Kalen LeBourne doing when he gets the ball in his hands? And how do those two compare? And I think that's something that the coaching staff's going to be wanting to look at as well, because both of them are highly talented. Either of those two could go and if they were to transfer out, either of them could go start day one at a lot of schools across the country. So for me, that's who. Go ahead.
It's crazy to me how Cabral LeBourne is back already. I mean, you can't go into too many specifics of his injury, but it's just crazy to me that he's back for a spring game after suffering a severe leg injury about 6-7 months ago.
I can't say too specifically because of HIPAA, but if I'm remembering correctly, I can't say too specifically due to the HIPAA laws. I don't want to violate anything that I'm not supposed to, especially with the opportunity that I've been blessed with the Florida State sports medicine team. That's probably the biggest concern I would have. But I can say, because it was reported on the internet, that he did have surgery on his knee. And anytime you're going to be having any type of surgery, assuming that there was some type of tear because of how long he was out, you're going to be looking anywhere between a 9-month and 15-month recovery, probably closer to the 12 to 15-month mark to being fully healthy. But the 9-month mark is typically where people are aiming at. And that happened, I want to say, third week of the season. So mid-September, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. It's only been about 7-8 months, I want to say. So just to speak to that he's already back, fully participating in practice, getting back after it, that speaks to, I think, A, his work ethic, B, his dedication to wanting to get better, but also C, hats off to our sports medicine team, FSU, for getting on him to get into his rehab and doing what he needs to do to be able to succeed. But also just his overall level of athleticism and talent. Because not many guys that aren't going to be uber talented like him are not going to be able to come back, at least, and come back and perform at the level that we think that he may be able to perform at on Saturday.
Put a little bit off what you're saying about his desire and athleticism. This guy's coming back for a spring game. His spot on the team and place in the team pecking order is pretty much locked up. He's the number two guy, behind Cam Akers and a chance to be on the field with Cam Akers at all times. And he's coming back for a spring game after a terrible, terrible leg injury. And that shows you that this guy just loves playing football. And that's not true about everyone that plays sports at a collegiate level and like that at all. I mean, think about basketball. You see a guy that's 6'8" and above, what's your first reaction? Oh, this guy must play basketball. Hey, do you play basketball? Yeah, most likely do. And they're not always driven to play basketball. They're always told to play basketball. A lot of them don't have the drive, which is why some 7-footers, they may have all the athleticism in the world and all that. They're not in the gym working on their game because they just don't love. They're just told to play. They're just told to do it because they were tall. And seeing this and having guys like LeBourne who just healthy and just wants to play, that is exactly the type of people you'd want in your locker room, in your organization, and in a team that needs not a jolt in them, but it's a team who needs players who just want to play football. Speaking of those players, there's a running back, former Florida running back, that you want to talk about his NFL draft prospects and why you think he is such a steal as a late-round pick, and that is Jaquez Patrick.
Well, I was blessed and fortunate enough to kind of get a decent rapport with Quez. He come in, I'd be, you know, always down to stretch him, you know, do the things I know how to do. But what I love most about Quez, and anytime I was watching the game, particularly when I was working refs and our offense was just stalling, I was just thinking or saying to whoever I was working with, I was like, we need to get Quez the ball, man. Because every time Quez has the ball in his hand, he's almost always getting positive yards of some nature. He's a bigger dude. You know, he was playing at like 240, I want to say, and he's dropped down to about 225, allegedly ran about a 4.5 at his pro day, which, yeah. That was my reaction too. Quez dropped down to 225 and ran a 4.5. And I was saying, I know, that's what I'm saying. So supposedly he didn't get invited to the combine, which I was like, are you serious? You're not going to invite Quez of all people? But I even talked to him and I told him, I was like, hey man, I told him in the training room one day closer to the end of the season, I was like, I don't know if people realize this. I don't know if you realize this, but I can't not tell you. You're going to be new school LeGarrette Blount in the NFL. Because he can run people over. LeGarrette Blount was very proficient in the pass game when called upon. Could catch the ball, do the things that he needed to do. Always falling forward, always having people bounce off of him, but has the feet to move laterally still at that size. And I remember I was at spring ball, or we were not at spring ball, I was in training camp, and there was I think a former player or a booster that went up and talked to Quez, and he was like, hey man, like, you're looking great out there, like, I never thought I'd see you move the way that you're moving out there. And he goes, yeah, I dropped some weight, and I've been feeling a lot lighter, been feeling a lot better. And I noticed that because he was making people miss, and it doesn't look the prettiest when he makes them miss. You're not like, oh my God, like, he just destroyed that dude's ankles, but he still made them miss and he's still running forward. And the thing is you're never going to hit him hard enough where he's going to fall backwards. He's always going to fall forward. And that's why whenever our team was stalling, I was like, get Quez the ball if you want to run the ball, because he will find a way to get at least 3-4 yards out of nothing. So he has the ability to move laterally while also still getting downhill. He's not the fastest guy, but I mean, reportedly he ran a 4.5 at his pro day, which is nuts. Like, your reaction alone kind of just speaks volume to that being. I was expecting like a 4.6, 4.62 from him. And he hit a 4.5. And I talked to him probably like 2 weeks before his pro day. I saw him at the Leech. I was working as a lifeguard, and I saw him at the Leech. And I was like, hey, man, how you doing? How's your pro day prep going and all this stuff? And he's like, good, man. Like, I've been training down, I think it's Orlando, I think. Wherever he's training, he goes, yeah, man, they have me getting right. You know, I'm dropping my body fat percentage. I'm really leaning out. I'm trying to get to down to 225, which has been really good for me. And I told him, I was like, hey, man, like, between me and you, I think you got underutilized here at FSU, and not because you weren't good enough, but because you were always playing second fiddle to someone that everyone saw as a superior talent because they have more of a wow factor than you. Quez isn't going to wow you away, but he is going to produce year in, year out. Kind of like, I don't mean to make this Lottie comparison, but kind of like a Frank Gore thing. When you watch Frank Gore play, he never really wows you like, holy smokes, but he gets the job done day in, day out, year in, year out. Because, you know, Quez was playing, first got here, and was playing with Dalvin Cook. And we all saw what Dalvin Cook could do. And then Dalvin Cook goes, gets drafted by the Vikings. In comes five-star Cam Akers. And it's like, all right, now he's going to be playing with Cam Akers, you know, 1-2 punch there. And the coaches get so excited about their new toys that they've just kind of forgotten what Quez is truly capable of and what he can really do. But he has, like, I rarely saw him drop passes in practice. Very respectful guy. Always was putting in the work. Always very soft-spoken. Doesn't really, you know, he'd joke around, but he was not one of those guys that's just being a kind of a hooligan at practice, as you know that they can be sometimes. He was always about business, always wanted to get the work done. Me and him, I pretty much always stretched him every Sunday practice. He'd come up to me, goes, "Hey man, stretch me out." And we had a good rapport. I was asking him how he was doing, but I was always just telling him, I was like, "Hey man, you're going to be new school to Garrett Blunt. And whatever team you go to is going to be like, how did Florida State not utilize him more? How did you not get utilized in so many different ways?" He was 100% by far our best running back last year, and it's not even close. In pass protection, in running the inside-outside zone reads, in the screen game, and just running routes out of the backfield, he was by far and away our best running back. And the thing is he doesn't, like, I'm not saying, you know, injuries happen to people, and some people, I don't truly believe that there's a thing called injury prone. I just think people kind of get unlucky at times and or put themselves in bad situations to get hurt. But Quez is a truck, and he's coming at you, and right when you think he's about to run you over, he's going to sidestep you, put stiff arm you to the ground, and keep on rolling. He is, whatever team gets him is going to be head over heels ecstatic, because he called himself in his pro day interview, he said, "I am a three down back." And when he said that, I wasn't like, BS, no, you're not. I was like, yeah, you are a three down back, Quez. And I'm glad you realized that, because the Garrett Blunt was a three down back as well for whatever team he played on. And you can easily be a three down back for whatever team you play on.
And like you, I was with Jacquez for 1 year. Not directly with him because I work for tight ends, not running backs. But something that I like to see and notice with coaches is that coaches push the players that they know can be great. They're on them constantly. They're on their butts at practice. They're yelling at them and stuff like that. And it's just a tough love type of aspect, especially that comes to football culture. And that's what our old running back coach, Jay Graham, did. And Jay Graham's one of the best running back coaches in the country, special teams guys in the country. And he was constantly on Quez, constantly saying, "Hey, you got to pick up this block. You got to run. Keep running, finish your blocks, catch the passes," all of these things. And if he messed up one time, Graham was on him. And that's the type of hard coaching that it may not work with everyone, but if you see them and you see players who are getting pushed by these coaches, it's because the coaches believe in them. And it's not to say that the coaches don't push the lesser talented people or don't coach them the same, but everyone's different. And sometimes you need that constant voice in your ear just saying, "Hey, you can be great. Keep doing this and all that stuff." And I got to see a little bit of the thunder and lightning in the fold with Dalvin Cook and Jacquez Patrick. But I mean, like you said, he was with Dalvin. But Quez showed some flashes. And in practice, he's really good. He's strong in pass pro. He has good hands. And for the most part, that slim down weight, that's a good thing. And it's like Odell Higgins. Odell's always had someone who he just picks on, whether it's Eddie Goldman, Jernigan. It's just always like that.
Coach Odell did that this year with our big man, Big Robert Cooper. Do you know anything about Big Rob?
Nope, not one thing.
He was a freshman D-tackle. This dude was 350+. His knee braces, like, I clean, one of my tasks as an AT, as a student athletic trainer, was to clean the knee braces after practice.
Yes, one of the most disgusting jobs I've ever had to do. Because
you guys didn't have the sanitary stations that help you clean?
No.
Man, that is terrible.
They didn't let us, no. Yeah, so we were cleaning them by hand, restrapping them up by hand, and I never had to look at whose knee brace it was when I picked up Robert Cooper's, because they were literally twice the size of anyone else's on the team. This dude is a big, big man. And
he's listed at for the spring game, weight-wise?
No, what's he listed at?
365.
Yeah, and he's actually, believe it or not, he's slimmed down. You know, like he has... Like, he has lost some weight, like, and he moves well. But the thing is you're not moving him. He is not being moved. And he's an athletic dude. But that was something that I always noticed from Coach Odell, was that he was always getting on Coop, always getting on Coop, always getting on Coop, always getting on Coop. And I have a feeling he was the same way with Big Marv, Marvin Wilson, who is a stud, by the way. Big Marv is probably the next, I mean, like, Brian Burns is probably going to go top 15. Big Marv's going to be right up there and go in top 15.
Hearing Odell yell at Eddie and all these people, Eddie, run him back the ball. Timmy, come on. Eddie, come on, do it. But do you know who the last player that I was there, the player who he was constantly on?
Who?
I'll give you a hint. Was the next lineman drafted that's playing in the NFL.
I mean, the only one that I can really think of off the top of my head is Derek Nnadi.
Correct. And you've said, so you've told the yoga flexibility about Nnadi and stuff like that to impress you. I just have a quick Derek Nnadi story. So, like I said, constantly getting pushed and all that stuff. And one day, Nnadi just didn't lose it, but was just like, just started laughing because Odell's on him. And he goes, why'd you recruit me, coach? And it was one of the funniest moments I've ever seen in practice, because you have just this lovable beast in Derek Nnadi. And then he's just finally just like, man, I'm doing my job. I'm doing the best I can ability. Why did you even bring me to the school if you don't think I can do it at a high level? So with that being said, it's just, Nnadi's a great guy. Odell's a great coach. He's back to Coop real quick. Is he nimble, or is he more like a Gilbert Brown, or is that ahead of your time?
I mean, he is a little slightly ahead of my time. But
you should Google a picture of him, because that man was a monster for the Packers.
I was always surprised, because I knew how big Coop was, and I knew, because I cleaned his knee braces, you know, like, I knew how big this man was. But I was always very impressed with his feet and how quickly he could move. And Coach Odell does wonders with the D-line. Wonders. It's awesome to watch him operate with the D-line. Come on, Marv. Come on, Marv. Let's get it, Marv. Come on, my good... you know, it's good...
Eddie, get back to the ball. Eddie, come on.
Yeah, you know.
He's just a lovable man. He's just a great guy. Represents
FSU. You know it, man.
Represents FSU so well, too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's so much fun to watch, man. He's a chef, and he's just prepping all of his players, man. And it's awesome. It's fun to watch. But that's that. And to kind of just circulate back to my man Quez, after that, you know, little rabbit hole we just kind of went down. Yeah, every time, every single time. This is truly no ordinary pod. but Quez, I've told him I believe in him. I think he's going to – I've been telling people ever since probably like 2-3 weeks into camp. I was like, Quez, if he may not be the greatest FSU running back of all time, but that dude is going to make so much money in the NFL, because he's going to be so valuable for so long, like LeGarrette Blount was, like Frank Gore is. Those two are the specific ones that come off the top of my head in terms of longevity of running backs that just – consistently get the job done.
Speaking of Frank Gore, I wrote an article about the Bills earlier this week, and then I wrote that Frank Gore's just a bring your lunch pail to work type of guy. You know, he's this guy who's gonna come in, do his job, work hard, keep his head down, and do all that stuff. And that's why I feel Quez in that. Barb, but do you think that 225 is gonna impact his ability with power per se?
Not at all. The dude is a tank. Like, he looks like, you look at him And like I've seen him around the training room lately, around the stadium lately, and yeah, you can tell he doesn't look a whole lot slimmer, but he moves like he is slimmer. In my opinion,
that's impressive. The fact that you can say that he's keeping up the strength on top of losing that weight and slimming down. We usually hear these stories with NFL draft prospects all the time, like, oh, so-and-so slimmed down his weight and all that stuff. But a lot of them lose that power. The thing about Quez, the thing that I love seeing the most is that he tramples DBs. He gets those extra 2 or 3 yards, falls forward. We used to love Ronald Jones as a prospect. He would always fall forward. And that's the same thing with Quez. And a player I see a comp is Latavius Murray.
That's a good comparison.
And they're both taller running backs, have a little bit. They're better in the pass game and more nimble than they're let on to be. But as a most part, they're just power backs. And they can give good spells. And you know, with Latavius Murray gone in New Orleans, you know, wouldn't it be ironic that if a team took a late round flyer on Jacquez, would be the Minnesota Vikings, pair him and Dalvin Cook up once again. Because two running backs on rookie contracts, especially when you have to pay, can't trust Kirk. That much money guaranteed. You're going to need a draft running back to spell Dalvin, especially Dalvin's injury history. But looking at this rest of this Garnett team and stuff like that, our secondary is stacked. I'm seeing players like Kyle Myers, Jordan Levante Taylor in this fold. I'm seeing people I never heard of, honestly, listed at stars and stuff like that. So like to hear your insight, because there's players I don't know. Maybe that's just me because I'm naive to the DBs thing. So just names you're looking at on this roster.
We're getting Carlos Becker back as well. He was one of the he didn't play last year, I don't think at all. But he was one of the big, his, I think it was his freshman year, though, when we won the Orange Bowl, he played a big role in getting that win against Michigan in that secondary, rotating between safety and I think nickelback at times. And so I'm excited to see what he, oh, whoa. Hey, they, oh wow. This is huge. I didn't realize this. On the Garnett team, is number 23 Hamza Nasruldeen listed as a linebacker?
Yes, he is. He's listed at star.
Wow, that's huge. On the basis that he was playing safety for us last year, and he was probably our hardest hitter. And as of right now, at least at the end of the season, our linebacking depth was not where we need to be. And I had no idea that he got shifted down to play, I'm assuming, inside. Or he's listed as the star?
Yes.
Position? Him and Woodby? Or him and Woodby listed is Woodby also listed as star?
No, Woodby is listed as a safety. And I feel like that's a more comfortable position for Woodby. You have him there, and you have Nasruldeen. Buck his name. He is listed as the star.
Yeah. So they have Hamza at star?
Yes. That is correct. Now, for the first time in a while, I feel like we actually have some quality DBs who are going to be playing in roles that they're more suited for.
Oh, it's between Jaden Woodby. Stanford Samuels was playing safety for us for so long, and they finally moved him to corner after I was thinking that they should have done that for weeks, and they moved him down to corner. And I was like, that is exactly where Stanford needs to be playing because, yes, number 8, yes, has the nice hair.
You know I'm a fan of nice hair, so I'm automatically a fan.
Yeah, but he got moved down, and he's longer. He's probably listed at 6'2", probably 210 or so, I would guess. I'm not looking at the official roster to see where I don't have their measurements in front of me. Yeah. Okay, so smaller in size than what I thought. But he has great feet, has very long arms. So like between Jaden Woodby, Stanford Samuels, AJ Litton, number 12, was one of those bring your lunch pail type of, to work type of guys who didn't really say a whole lot, but consistently he would make a play and be like, oh wow. Okay. I see you, AJ.
For future reference, you and I need to come up with the more modern version of bring your lunch pail to work. It's 2019 and this phrase has been around for a while. I appreciate old phrases and stuff like that. But come on, there needs to come a time where you and I can put our heads together, come up with a more modern version of things a lunch pail to work anymore. I don't. I doubt you do.
No, I understand. And then we got two. I mean, we got Asante Samuel Jr., who played as a true freshman last year, who, in my opinion, was one of our better DBs. He's undersized, but the dude is tenacious as can be, and he is not scared of anyone. He will get in anyone's face at any time and talk smack, and then he will turn around the next play and beat you one-on-one from whatever they're doing. Asante Samuel is fun to watch. Number 27, Akeem Dent, is the five-star recruit that was one of the early enrollees. That's also, according to one of my student athletic trainer friends, says that he's been balling. Moving down the list, we got... Oh, that's it. That's it for DBs that I see.
Outside of the DBs you've already listed, I'm just looking at the rest of the roster. You have an Amari Gaines guy. These are guys I've never heard of. I mean, he's number 33, which means he's already one of my favorite players, strictly because that's my old football number.
Yeah, so Amari.
I mean, he's 6'3". That's just crazy for his size and stuff like that to be listed at the position he's currently listed at, for the spring game at least.
He's really long and is a long strider. I'm really excited to see what Amari can do, because a lot of the times I was watching him in practice, when he knew what to do, like without a doubt and did not hesitate, he was one of the best players on the field. But it was about him knowing and being confident in his decision of what he needed to do a lot of the time. Exactly. But when he wouldn't hesitate and when he was confident in himself and would go make the plays, the dude is uberly talented. He was actually, he could have easily gone and played college. I think he got drafted in pro baseball, if I'm being 100% honest. I'm pretty sure. I know that he was one heck of a ball player. Because I've talked to him about it, and he goes, "Yeah, dude, I love playing baseball." Like, he talked at length of how he had to decide between baseball and this. So I want to say I'm fairly confident he got drafted or got looks to go play college ball at the minimum. So I'm excited to see, like, again, he was just a true freshman last year. So I'm excited to see what he comes and does after having that full, because a lot there, that's the difference between some freshmen and another. Some freshmen don't get razzled by coming in because they're like, oh, it's just football, it's just school, I know how to do those two things. Other freshmen get razzled a little bit and they forget that it's just football and just school at a higher intensity, and they kind of get distracted or homesick and they get down on themselves. Like, people fail to take those things into account, because, like, I've been a college freshman, you've been a college freshman, I can't speak to your experiences, but, like, I was homesick my freshman year and I had a hard time at times, you know, being in Tallahassee and being fully myself and being confident and things of that nature. And so I can only imagine what it's like even more so when you have the spotlight on you. And if you're not performing as well as you would like to immediately, or what you're used to in doing in practice, like against lower competition in high school, it can be hard on the mental if you're not mentally ready to take on those challenges. So again, I'm excited because our freshman class from this past year was just, oh my goodness, man. Just like, they were always make flashing plays left and right, and it was so much fun to watch. So again, just another dude that I'm excited to see what he can do. And they have him listed at the star position, correct? That's a great... Yeah, so that star position, I think, is kind of like that essentially is like that in-the-box safety. That it's someone that can come down to the box, cover a tight end, cover a slot receiver, but also is big enough to just man run support. And he has started to fill, like, I've watched him hit the weight room. He has started to fill out. He has started to get some Amari Gaines on him, just for the obvious, just for the obvious pun there. And he's in good position to make a lot. Like I said, this team is extremely talented. Like, I'm just looking at this talent and it's just like, oh my goodness. Like, there are so many guys on here that I can see doing so many big things. So again, I'm excited to see, I'm excited to see what Amari can do. But again, I'm going to have even more thoughts after the spring game about what all these, about what all these guys can do. I do want to highlight, two of my two favorite players. There's no way that we could talk about the spring game without me highlighting my two favorite players. You've heard me talk about them at length. Anyone that knows me here at Florida State knows that I talk about these two at length. Anytime that I see and get to say hello to them or talk to them at all in the training room or whatever, I am just like infatuated. It makes my, I could be having the worst day in the world and I'll be happy. I'm the biggest fangirl when it comes to these two. Number 20, Keyshawn Helton, and number 88, Treshawn Harrison. When I first started working practice, Keyshawn on the first day of, they had just a freshman practice on the first day, cramped up really bad. So I was told that I needed to make sure that he got water and got lots of fluids because he was running, like he didn't have any subs when it was just a freshman practice. He was just going the entire time. So my boss, Cruz, was like, hey, you need to make sure that Keyshawn is always getting water. And I was just like, yes, sir. So I'm always making sure. And I'd be like, hey, Keyshawn, do you need any fluids? And if he said yes, you know, I get him his fluids. If he said no, he'd go, nah, appreciate you though, Noah. And not many players would ever thank me and not many players would ever tell me that they appreciate me nonetheless. But he was always one of those guys that always was respectful. And anytime he asked me for something, I was obviously 100% down to do it. So on a personality standpoint, he has the personality to be great. He has the work ethic to be great. Now, on a football performance level, this dude is on a different level because I was always watching practice, okay? And I was with the receivers. And when I was watching practice, you know, I got to watch the quarterbacks or the receivers. I thought that I was with the best position group possible because I get to watch the best action all the time. And Nooney made some pretty impressive catches, pretty acrobatic catches, because he's really good at route running and he has great hands, great hand-eye coordination. Not the fastest dude, not the quickest dude, not the tallest dude, but Nooney got the job done because he's good at route running and can catch the football. Take all of that and put it in a more athletic specimen, and that's what you have in Keyshawn Helton. His route running is refined. His technique is refined. His mental game is refined. I swear to God, I saw this dude dive or make some crazy catch at least one time in every single practice during camp, every single one. And I was like, this dude is the truth. He's laying out for balls, going after it, running guys, like outrunning dudes that shouldn't, that he shouldn't be, and running over people that he shouldn't be. You know, he's doing a lot of impressive things that I was like, this dude is going to be a stud. And after the first week of camp, I saw Treshawn and Keyshawn in the locker room. And I was just like, you know what, dude, just go and do it. So I went up to him and I was like, hey, y'all, just so you know, I've been watching you guys a lot. As long as you two keep balling and doing what you're doing, no one here can hang with y'all. Not a single person can hang with y'all if y'all just do what y'all know how to do and you keep working and getting better at what you guys know how to do. And at first they were kind of like, who is this kid telling me this? And then I ended up, and then they kept making plays at practice. So I kept telling them, like, after they would impress me for another 2-3 weeks, I'd be like, hey, y'all, just so you know, like, we were at IMG, and at the end of the IMG thing, I was like, hey, none of these guys can hang with y'all if y'all keep doing what you can do. And now I have a pretty good rapport with Keyshawn and Treshawn, but that's just how, from the get-go, these have been my guys. Like, these two are the reason I am going to the game. I have been telling everyone that has ever talked FSU football with me, I go, hey, no one knows this because there's no way for anyone to know, but Keyshawn Helton is about to be everyone's favorite player. And do you know, and I'm going to look this up to make sure I'm 100% right, do you know who his... Do you know who his uncle is?
Keyshawn Harrison?
No, Keyshawn Helton is his name. Treshawn Harrison is the other one. Do you know who Keyshawn Helton's uncle is?
Did he play football?
Yep, former Florida State great.
Was he a wide receiver?
No.
What position did he play then?
I think he'll give it away almost immediately. Linebacker.
I'll go with Marvin Jones.
Nope, Derek Brooks.
Ah.
The nephew.
And his son's on the team, too.
Yes, who I also used to play football with at one point. Fun fact.
Yeah, and he's from Gaither, too, which is the school I'm zoned for right up the street. So kind of ironic all this is pulled together. Derek Brooks has two people that he's related to on the team.
Yeah, so he's, and this is kind of my theory on athletes, because, you know, Keyshawn Johnson, do you know who his nephew is?
Keyshawn Johnson?
No. Keyshawn Johnson, old 19, used to play for the Bucks, old school guy.
Mm-hmm.
His nephew is Michael Thomas of the Saints.
Ah.
Yeah. So those are the only two scenarios where I know, like, so it's very small sample size. But Keyshawn must have gotten some of the genes from Mr. Brooks. Who's your favorite player? Mr. Derek Brooks. Well, we can just substitute Mr. Derek Brooks and we can just input who's your favorite player? Mr. Keyshawn Helton. Because this dude, man, he's going to do so many things. And I am so excited to see what he can do because no one knows about him. And anytime I mention Keyshawn, everyone's like, who? And I'm like, just wait, man. This guy can catch the ball. And the thing is I was talking to my friend Matt, who works football in the spring. And I guess Bryles has been oozing over Keyshawn because every time Keyshawn's always going, hey, coach, let me go deep. Let me go deep. Let me go deep. They don't send him deep, but he's always asking. So he always wants to be making the big play. Secondly, whenever Keyshawn doesn't get the ball, do you know what Bryles is yelling at him during a play? Great block, Keyshawn! Great block, Keyshawn! So when he's not getting the ball, he's trying to spring people forward on bigger runs. He's trying to help his team out. He's doing what he needs to do to get what he needs to get done. And if you have working his first spring practice as the offensive coordinator, and he's yelling as of right now, a true freshman going into a true sophomore year, yelling at him, great block, Keyshawn. Great block, Keyshawn. You know that you just have something in the works, man. You just know that there's something good cooking. And okay, I love Keyshawn, but Trayshawn, man, they're a great 1-2 punch, an absolute phenomenal 1-2 punch, because Keyshawn's got the speed, Trayshawn's got more of the length, and Trayshawn can catch anything. Absolutely anything. And where they both dominate is their route running and their manipulation of hands at the point of attack. Anytime the receivers were doing drills, they were always two of the most refined receivers in terms of technique, focusing on what they needed to do, staying after practice, catching balls with, like, I saw them routinely taking those two in particular, taking reps with DeAndre Francois after practice last year. Like, they're always working, and those two are best, at least to what I saw, those two are best friends, Trayshawn and Keyshawn, and they are ballers. No one knows about them right now because they were just freshmen, but I kept saying it last year. Everyone kept asking me, Noah, why aren't we doing better on offense? Like, what's this whole thing? And I go, there's one thing you can do to make your offense run. And I go, get Keyshawn the ball and get Trayshawn the ball. Do you know who the only person to score a touchdown against Clemson was? Keyshawn, sprung by an awesome Trayshawn block. After I had no choice. I had no choice. So between those two, man, though, they're going to be so big, and I'm so glad I'm getting this on record before Saturday, because everyone's going to, I promise, everyone's going to be coming up to me and at least raving about one of those two. And anytime Keyshawn made a big play or Trayshawn made a big play, everyone would try to find me, like during a game, would try to find me on the sideline because they knew I was going to be freaking out. I can't help it because they are so good and so talented. And it's not about if they're good. It's about when they get the opportunity to shine. There's a video of Keyshawn running to set two receivers to the left, two receivers to the right. He's the slot receiver, the inside receiver on the left side. They send him in motion, in shotgun, send him in motion, and then just give him a fly sweep. So all they're doing is getting the ball, tossing it to him, and he's running around the edge. This is against Boston College, who had a pretty solid defense. They ran the ball well, played solid defense. That was BC's MO this past year. There's a video, and you can easily look it up on Twitter, Instagram, anywhere.
He gets the ball. He turns the corner, and this safety from BC comes screaming down the hole, like absolutely screaming down the hole. And they meet probably 4 yards down the field right at the numbers. And he comes screaming down the hill, down the hole. And will you read me Keyshawn's measurements for me?
It says 5'9", 165 pounds.
5'9", a buck 65. He's not a big dude, but this man ran over, like lowered his left shoulder and ran over this BC safety, bounced off a little bit to the right, and picked up 15 more yards down the sideline. It was a 22-yard run. And he got popped 5 or 7 yards downfield from a screaming ACC safety. And he is 5'9", a buck 65. This dude is a baller. Anytime Trayshawn got the ball, he was at least getting 8 to 10 yards at a minimum. And that was a lot of fly sweeps. And anytime he got the ball, I was like, hey, I'm not surprised. Get two of your best players the ball. Good things are going to happen. One thing that I've always heard of, like Bruce Arians, I know I know for a fact Bruce Arians is on record saying this. In tough situations, in tight situations, in game deciding situations, you don't think, what's the best play to call? You go, where can I get my best player the ball? Trayshawn and Keyshawn are two of those people, and I'm so excited for them to become everyone's favorite FSU football players, because I know it's coming. I've seen it. It's been coming for a long time. I will live and die on this hill until the day I die, just like I did with the Saints. But I know for a fact that this outcome is going to be better than that outcome. I am so excited to see what these two can do.
And that's presumptively throwing the ball to them is James Blackman. And how big of a weekend is this for James Blackman?
I think it's huge. I really do think it's huge. But if I'm being honest, he's the guy. I think he knows this. He 100% is aware of the situation. He has superb leadership skills. People love playing for Jay Black. Players love playing for Jay Black. He's an easy guy to root for. But for me, he needs to be able to make. He needs to be able to go through his reads, make the throws, and he can't be having any errant throws. That's really what it comes down to. Because, as much as I hate to say it, he's a giraffe. You know, he is tall, skinny, and long, but he throws a pretty football, and he's smart. He gets it and has good leadership skills. But he needs to perform. And in Brile's offense, in Taggart's offense, they usually try to have some type of running quarterback. That's not going to be his MO. It's just never going to happen. So he needs to. But the thing is he is in such a blessed situation, because I think we're going to look back, and I heard someone say it last year, and I agree with it again this year. We're going to look back at what this FSU receiving core roster was like, and we're just going to go, wow, look at the talent. Kind of like what you do with LSU when OBJ and Jarvis Landry got to play on the same team, and now that's happening again in the NFL. But you kind of look back at that receiving core and you go, wow, look at the talent. You look back at that FSU defense, that national championship, you go, wow, look at the talent. I think that's what we have with this receiving core. I think that's what you have with this running back core. One guy that I don't, before we run out of time, one guy I don't want to forget to discuss at the running back position, Anthony Grant. He was I would put him in the same category as Trayshawn and Keyshawn in terms of freshmen that wowed me. This dude in scrimmages would literally be running the ball, and there'd be a linebacker right in the hole, and he would lower his shoulder. And he's not a big dude. AG is not a big dude. And he would lower his shoulder, run the AG's always looking to run someone over, but he has the speed and the agility to not have to run you over every single time. It's not his only trick, but he loves doing it, and he's so good at it. But to get back to Jay Black just has to operate in the confines of the offense, do what he needs to do, limit turnovers, and he will be fine because he has the leadership and the poise to do so. He just needs to be able to deliver athletically and as a football player and as FSU's starting quarterback.
I had a couple transfers, but the main graduate transfer we got was Alex Hornibrook, and I don't think he's a fit at all for this offense, but do you think he has any chance to push Blackman when he gets on campus?
Do you want me to... You know where he's from, right?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
you know how I feel about Wisconsin. Not a big fan. You know, they take it to my Huskers frequently. This is how I felt when Alex Hornibrook was starting for Wisconsin. Oh, Alex Hornibrook starting against my Huskers? Psh, we got a shot. He's great. He's a great insurance policy. He's a great insurance policy if anything happens to Jay Black. But if, I'll put it this way, if he ends up beating out Jay Black, we're in trouble again this year.
Well, for our sake, let's hope it never comes to that. Noah, enjoy the spring game, my man. You carried us this podcast. This is your right up your cup alley. So,
hey, thanks for having me back on the No Ordinary Pod.
That's right. We are the No Ordinary Podcast on the No Ordinary Pod on the Radio St. Pete Network and No Ordinary Podcast Network. So, Noah, take it easy, man. We'll be back next week. We'll have a report about the game, and yeah, I'm sure there'll be others to talk about NFL drafting up and stuff like that. So,
appreciate you. Thank you, Michael.
No problem. Everyone, enjoy your weekend.